We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Bite, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim. Welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, the penultimate podcast of the year as we wrap things up in men's basketball. We had women's basketball last week. A little bit later on, we'll hear from Bill Musgrave, offensive coordinator, as they've had a couple of practices as they continue spring football workouts. A reminder, the spring game, April the 11th. All right, Coach Fox with us now. We're taping this prior to the Pac-12 tournament, just so you know, we won't be talking about the games that the Bears will be playing here. So, Mark, I'd like to talk as much as we possibly can about the season. You've been on the job for 11 months, gone through basically a full season. Tell us what it was like, what you saw, what you need to do going forward as well.
Well, it's been a really fast 11 months, and I think that it's been a joyful 11 months. I've enjoyed every second of it, and one of the things that Jim Knowlton asked me to do was go through the first year and really do a deep evaluation of where we're at. You know, what are we missing? What do we have? You know, what things can we address in the short term? What do we need to target long term? And just do a massive evaluation of you know, where the program, you know, is and how we can, you know, put together a plan to make it great again. And so, you know, I've tried to keep that in mind in the first 11 months, as well as trying to figure out ways for us to have as much success as we can have, because ultimately that gives you momentum. And so, you know, it's been I think a lot of things that we expected, and some that maybe we haven't. But it's been a lot of fun.
As you look, I'd like to find out more about the guy you saw at the gas station. That you mentioned this at the post game show after the Oregon State game. That you know, he and a lot of people weren't sure what to expect this year from your team. And as we mentioned, after that Oregon State game, you finished eighth in the league, much higher than a lot of people outside the program's expectations. Played really well at home for almost the entire season, certainly the conference season, maybe one or two games. The road has been problematic, but with a young team, those things are kind of symptomatic of young teams, first year in the program. So it's a little more difficult on the road. Just talk about, you know, the league season in particular and how you saw that develop after that opening game at Stanford.
You know, I think for us, you know, to be picked last, you know, that's gives you motivation to prove everybody wrong. But, you know, that was the prevailing theory, is that because the program had suffered great adversity, that we were going to suffer great adversity again. And I just didn't have that in my plans. You know, I knew we have some limitations within our team, but I just was determined that we could make some progress this year. And are we pleased that we finished eighth or tied for eighth? No, but I do think it's a lot higher than just about everybody expected that we would be. And so I'm really proud of these kids for giving us a little bit of positive momentum. And you know, it has been, I think, important for us to reestablish, you know, some sort of a home court advantage. And the first part of that has to be that you're going to play well at home, you know. And I think that as the season progressed and we learned how, you know, this group could find ways to win, we developed somewhat of a confidence at home, and I think we, you know, our attendance started to come back, and energy came back in the building, and we felt like, okay, at the end, when we play every game at home, we're going to have chances to win those. Mm-hmm. Obviously, on the road, we have not been a very good basketball team, and our defense hasn't traveled as well as it should. You know, I think our road routine and how we travel and the routines in which we have kind of in place need to be adjusted to give us the best chances to win. But, you know, that's all part of the process. And I think we're fortunate that we do have young players, mm-hmm. because you have to understand maybe why you lose before you can really win at a high level. And I think some of these young guys are really getting an understanding of that this year.
Speaking of young guys, last weekend, case in point, Kwani had two career highs against Oregon and Oregon State. He's showing more aggressiveness. He's got that deep corner three, as we sit in a room that has a pool table, the corner pocket three he's kind of got down. He's one of those young guys that seemingly is starting to figure some things out. And you know, defensively with his length and so forth, he's got a promising future.
Well, I think, you know, we call him 2K because he's got the same first name and last name, but you know, 2K's had a really good finish to the year. And I'll be honest, maybe some of our early struggles were because he missed essentially a month with a little minor knee scope. And so he could have really impacted our team maybe earlier had he not had the injury. But that's part of the game. And the good thing is that he's developed and continued to improve. And has three more years left, and so we're excited about Kwani and I think what his impact on this program can be in the next 3 years.
Joel Brown in conference play has a better than 2-1 assist to turnover ratio. So people that think about football interceptions versus touchdowns, you know, anything above 2-1 is a pretty good mark. And for a guy that, you know, suffered an injury in the Utah game, I believe it was with the hand, got some stitches, has shown some promise at the offensive end with distributing. But defensively, he really gets after people. And I know we face Stanford this week. That first game over at Stanford, Tyrell Terry was off to a terrific start in non-conference. And Joel Brown with his physicality, what do you see from him going forward?
Well, Joel has I think, the ability to be an elite level defender. He's got great speed, quickness, and strength. And so defensively, he has a lot of physical attributes that you want. But he's also very intelligent, you know, I think that he'll only get better at that end. You know, offensively, he certainly has a good assist to turnover ratio. You know, I think like with maybe a freshman quarterback, since you used the football analogy, there's just so much to learn that most freshman point guards, as they try to just to make everybody else better, aren't going to probably still make plays for themselves. I think as he gets older, you'll see him make more plays for himself as well as others. He had a very unfortunate injury, you know, against Utah, in which he He split essentially the web in his fingers and got six stitches during the game and came back and made some great plays. But it's really hindered him, to end the season, and it's made it really hard for him to do things with the ball. So I'm proud of the courage he's shown to try and play through it. He's another guy that I think has a very, very bright future.
What can you say about Matt Bradley this week, named to the conference team, one of the top 15 players in this league, in a league that had some pretty talented players this year, particularly young players. But he's kind of been there virtually every night, only two games not in double figures. So he has been he's had a circle around him. When you look at the other team's defensive scouting report, he's the number one guy each and every night, and he's handled that really well, 26 points on a couple of occasions. And going forward, I mean, it's going to be a rock for you guys. I mean, a pillar, somebody that you can build around.
Well, Matt has had a terrific year, and I think when you take into consideration that he is the number one target of the defense to stop, and the fact that he's still been able to be as productive as he has been, really, I think, shows just how good Matt is, how determined he is. I also just how I think, as you said, how much of a pillar he can be. He cares about the right things. He was a wonderful young man, and he's got a great competitive spirit. And as he continues to develop as a player and develops as a leader, I think you'll see that competitive nature spread throughout a team. And when it does, that's a really valuable trait to have within a ball club. So, you know, Matt's had a great year, and he's been a real treat. I'm really proud of the fact that he's had such a good year, and that the league's coaches recognized him for it.
Over 500 points this year, and early next season he'll pass 1,000 in his career. He'll only be a junior. All right, let's turn the page a little bit, look forward to next year. You signed two players in the fall, local product from Bishop O'Dowd, young man from the East Coast, Jalen Celestine. I know Jalen's been injured a little bit, but tell us about Bowser and what kind of a year he's had for Bishop O'Dowd.
Well, O'Dowd's had a really good season, and Monty's, you know, they've been able to advance in the playoffs, and he's, you know, I think with both of them, you know, Jalen had an injury that was kind of out of precaution that his family has decided to sit him, you know, most of the year to let him be healthy for next year, and we supported that. But I think that both of them at 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", however you measure them, with shoes, without shoes, whatever. But they're going to give us two long, athletic wing players and allow us. One of the things that this team has had to deal with is that we're smaller than everybody. And so every night, we're younger than most teams and we're smaller than most teams, and that's a tough thing to overcome. And those two kids will come in and give us legitimate length and athleticism on the wings, allow us to play a little bit more conventionally on a perimeter, but also give us the ability to do some switching and things defensively that this year we just can't do. So we're excited about, you know, those guys, joining this great group of young core guys that we have now, and hopefully they can combine and give us a great future.
By the numbers, it looks like you've got two scholarships available this year. That you could sign in the fall. You know, in years gone by, Mark, there was the term class balance. And that's a hard one to put your finger on nowadays in college basketball. But I also sense that, for the most part, you're looking at guys that'll be at Cal for 3 or 4 years. You take a one and done, obviously, or two. But in that regard, how important is class balance to you in the current state of the program?
Well, obviously, you want to have the best players that you can have, but I think that the one and done model, if you really look at it, it hasn't been as successful for all but about 3 or 4 programs across the country. And we will certainly take the best player we can get, but ultimately, we have to, if we're going to have continued success, we need to find players that are going to be in the program 3 and 4 years, and have where we have an older, complete team every year, and a team that's been battle-tested and one that has experience on their side. And that's why it's so important for these young kids this year to have some success and to have some tough losses so they can grow and be better next year. I think fortunately for us, these kids have been able to do both.
Mm-hmm.
And as we add players, you know, to our team, and each year get a little older, we'll start looking more and more complete. And then I think at the end of the day, have a team that can win with either our offense or our defense or our experience. And when you can find multiple ways to win within your group, then you can have a great season.
What specifically might you be looking for in the spring signing period, or even the summertime as well?
You know, I think that, we obviously know that we need shooting on this team. We'd like to add, you know, another point guard. We feel like that you know, offensively we've been a little bit challenged, and we're not playing. You know, we've played slower this year than we want to play. It's not how we ultimately will play, but it was a way that this team could have a chance to win some games. And so, you know, we're gonna, you know, continue to try and, you know, add more and more shooting and where we can take advantage of the 3-point line. But you know, that's a slower process, but certainly one we want to make some progress on this offseason.
All right, as we look forward to next season, obviously the Pac-12 is going to go to a 20-game schedule. So we start early. I want to say December 3rd against Arizona State. And 10 days prior to that, you get to go back to your home state of Kansas. They announced just yesterday, I guess it was, a tournament in Kansas City. The Bears have been back there before at the Sprint Center. I've already put an order in at Gates Barbecue for the President's Choice, so that has already been taken care of. I believe it's South Carolina, Nebraska, TCU, and the Bears, a four-team tournament in Kansas City. But in the process of the Pac-12 going to 20 games, that means that your non-conference is reduced by two games as well. How has that affected the ability to try to put a schedule together?
Well, next year will be one of the more challenging years as far as our schedule, because we're going to play more games away from home than we are at home, which for a high major team is almost unheard of. And so, you know, it's something that, because we were kind of ahead of the game when the league made the change to 20 games, and we gave up two home games and picked up one in the league, you know, it flipped the numbers. And so we have a lot of travel next year. We really do. This group's going to be on the road a lot, and so we're going to have to really improve how we play away from home. Of the tournament, Kansas City will be a terrific experience. South Carolina will have a lot of really good players back. TCU has one of the younger teams in America right now who like us, will be much improved in a year, and so it'll be a very tough field in Kansas City, and we have to return to Boston College. We've got to play a couple games in Southern California, and the league game, as you mentioned, the league games are starting early. So this off season is going to be critical, because we need to get out of the gate, you know, playing well, and we need to be able to play well next year away from home.
I know you inherited a non-conference schedule. You weren't all that pleased with some of the places that you had to go to. And you're, you know, down the road, your panacea of non-conference, what are you looking for as far as either home away, exempt tournaments, you know, top 25 teams versus other teams? But what's kind of the ideal schedule you'd like to have going forward?
Well, I think that there's a couple boxes we would like to check. You know, going into the Oregon State game last week, and I haven't checked it since, we had the fifth toughest schedule based, you know, from the NCAA's numbers, the fifth toughest schedule out of 350 some teams in Division I. That's not a good formula for a team that's in rebuilding mode. So, you know, yes, we inherited a schedule that was not ideal, and essentially we've inherited next year's schedule too, because it was a lot of it was complete. The things that we would like to be able to do was create a strength of schedule that gives us the best chance to be in postseason play. I would like to increase the number of Saturday home games that our team plays, so it helps our fans. I think that's critical that we play on Saturday afternoons and give our fans a chance to come to the arena, and because that's really what college basketball is at its best. And so, you know, I think that we've got some work to do on the schedule. We're going to try and stay in exempt events as much as we can. There's some legislation which will change the number of games that those tournaments might possibly be. And so as that's determined this spring, that'll impact, you know, how we move forward in the scheduling also. But we also want to have some high-level games, and and have some great teams come into Haas Pavilion, and you can't do that unless you're willing to go on the road and play them at their place. But we're going to look to try and check all those boxes eventually. But you know, that's going to take a little time because so much has been contracted already.
Well, a lot to look forward to, no question about that, Mark. We appreciate you being on the podcast throughout the course of the year. Good luck in the offseason. We've enjoyed this first year watching this team improve as the year has gone on, the individuals as well. We appreciate that, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Go Bears.
Well, we're going to turn back the hands of time a little bit here with our next guest on the program, and that is the offensive coordinator for the Bears this year, Bill Musgrave. We go back quite a few years. We won't necessarily say how many, but it's quite a few. It's good to see you again. I remember that before you got hired here, I think I saw you at a basketball game. You kind of came out of nowhere when you were coaching with the Raiders, and I was looking across the way and I said, is that Bill Musgrave? Yeah, that's Bill Musgrave. Of course, we go back to your days when you were playing at Oregon back in the late 80s. Good to see you again. You've had a couple of practices here with the Bears so far. Just tell us how the first couple of days have gone.
It's gone really well, Todd. It is good to see you again and be back here on campus here in Berkeley. And when I was coaching for the Raiders, it's almost like I couldn't stay away. It was fun to come over here and watch both football and basketball here in Berkeley. And great to be directly involved instead of just being on the outside like I used to be. So the first three practices have been great. Guys are getting better each and every day. They're learning our system. They're learning the language. They're starting to play faster and have less hesitation. So I know we're really heading in the right direction.
It's an interesting situation. You come in and you've got a lot of guys that have played a lot of football. It's not like you're coming in with a completely green, no pun intended, group of guys. You got the Chase Garbers, several quarterbacks that have gotten snaps, the offensive linemen gotten snaps, wide receivers, running backs. So who's got the bigger adjustment, you to them or them to you?
Well, you're right. There's a combination of factors there because they've been ingrained in the system from the three previous years. Plenty of upperclassmen that we're counting on. So they've got some unlearning to do, some new learning. There's some things that will stay intact that they can bank on. So we're trying to make it as seamless a transition as we can.
Quarterback, you've got Chase Garbers, 7-0 last year in games in which he played and finished. What have you seen from him so far?
Chase has been terrific. He's been putting in the extra time in the meeting room, has really embraced the new language. There's some new footwork going on with the QBs that we're working through, and so he's been all in, and it showed on the practice field. Had a number of explosive completions on Saturday, even in the rain. So really been pleased with the initial impression of Chase.
I guess the one thing we've noticed is that more under center than maybe total shotgun as it has been the last couple of years here. What are the big adjustments or the biggest adjustments a quarterback has to make with taking the snaps under center as opposed to being in a shotgun?
Well, the play-action game is going to be much more difficult for the QBs. When they make a play-action fake under center, they're going to literally turn their back on the defense, and then after they set up in the pocket, they're going to have to assess what they missed out on while they were making that fake. Whereas in the gun, you can keep your eyes downfield and ride that running back through the range of the fake and feel like you didn't miss a thing. So that takes turns. That takes time on task. It takes practice. It takes training. So we're going to try to give our guys plenty of reps so they're comfortable with that new technique.
The other things, it appears, maybe more usage of the tight end, but the one position we haven't seen much of is at the fullback position. You're going to have a fullback. We haven't had a fullback here for a while, so how do you go about establishing who those guys are?
Yep, we're trying to unearth them. We're unearthing fullback candidates, both from the defensive side of the ball and also on our side. There'll be some tight ends that'll be asked to do some fullback jobs, and then we'll see if we can find some other candidates from the defensive side of the ball as well as we move through this process. But it'll be a good thing for us. Having a fullback on the field is a good thing for the offense. The defense has to respect it, and it helps in the run game, but more importantly, it helps in the pass game. We can throw against some single safety coverages and some loaded boxes more than when we don't have a fullback out there, and that's when the passing game becomes really, really fun.
It's tough to find that position nowadays because even in the NFL,
The offenses have changed over the years, and you don't see many true fullbacks. The Niners have one of the best in the National Football League, so I guess that's a good example to go by. But even in high school, I mean, how many teams, you know, have a fullback in the high school ranks these days?
Well, that's as we talked about moments ago, it's part of the evolution in football where there's more shotgun now than there is under center. And we're going to be more shotgun, too, than under center. We'll definitely be. But difficult to employ a fullback when you're in the gun. And so with the spread offenses and the air raids and a lot of the quirky stuff that's going on, the fullback position has become obsolete.
Yeah. It's interesting when people say under your tutelage the Bears are going to run more of a pro-style offense. And as I look at the pros now, I'm thinking, well, what is a pro-style offense as opposed to spread this, that, and the other? I mean, how would you characterize what fans are going to see?
Well, I think it's going to be, very diverse. We're going to try to be difficult to defend. We're not going to line up in the same place very often. We're going to have a lot of the same concepts. We don't want to out-finesse ourselves, but we don't want to be stagnant or iron deer in the lawn where the defense knows where we're going to be each and every snap. So we'll do our best to be difficult to defend and then also feature our guys' strong traits. It'll be engineered or tailored, customized, so to speak, to our guys and what they do well, and we're going to find that out. There's no way I could answer that after three practices because we're learning about our guys. Are we good hook runners, out runners, post runners? Can we run the inside zone? Are we better at gap scheme runs? We want to really do what our guys are best at.
All right, let's talk about being in the NFL for 20 years. Now, you spent 2 years in the college ranks, though, with Al Groh back at Virginia. You had a pretty good quarterback back there as well that you eventually actually were around in the National Football League with Matt Schaub. Tell us about coming back to the college. You only have 20 hours a week. Okay, in the National Football League, it's a job, and you get a lot of time with those. You get 20 hours with these guys. So what's the biggest adjustment you have to make?
Well, I think we have to be more innovative. We have to use ingenuity with technology because you're right, we don't have the hours. It's not a full-time job like in the NFL for the players. So we just have to be smarter. We have to be able to get things to them on their iPads, a lot more quarterback notes and position player notes where they can watch the film on their own and refer to our notes rather than us spending physical time with them because you're right, the hours just do not exist.
Yeah. All right, let's go through some of your NFL experiences. A number of different coaches, obviously with the Niners, you were on the same for a while with Joe Montana and Steve Young were on that team. You got Mike Shanahan, where you were with him a couple of times throughout the course of your pro playing career and or coaching career. Any one guy that kind of stands out as maybe you learned or you've tried to emulate from that particular person in your experiences in the National Football League?
Well, you talked about it, Todd. There's been so many right place at the right time occurrences for me. I just can't believe how fortunate I've been. But to be around Mike Holmgren and Mike Shanahan and then be able to back up Steve and Joe and John Elway and be around Troy Aikman for half a season, Peyton Manning half a season. I've just tried to take a lot of good notes from those guys. And then when I was a player back at Oregon or things like that, I really used a lot of the same coaching points for quarterbacks that Bob Toledo used on me when I was my first 3 years at Oregon. He was our quarterback coach and coordinator under Coach Brooks. So all those things I've been fortunate to absorb and then redistribute as a coach.
As we mentioned, we go back to your days when you're playing with the Ducks, and you were one of the guys that kind of turned that football program around. I mean, they hadn't been to a bowl game in three-plus decades, and you got them to an Independence Bowl and a Freedom Bowl, and from there they kind of took off. When you look at your days up there and having turned that thing or helped turn that thing around with the guys you were with, that'd be pretty satisfying.
Well, that was a good experience. I think it's similar to what we're experiencing right here in Berkeley. The Cal football program is a program built on defense, and at that time in the 80s, Oregon was built on defense, and we would win games 10-7, 16-10 over Arizona. We were built on defense. Then on offense, we wanted to play complementary football and do our part, and we didn't always do our part, but it seems like that's where we are today in 2020 with the Golden Bears, California, we want to do our part on offense to complement our defense, which is the strong point of our team. We've got to pick up the pace on offense so we can do our part and take it from there and keep adding to all this win total that seems to be ascending year in and year out.
When you were playing, Colorado was a non-league game. If I remember correctly, like maybe your first start came at Colorado for a guy from Grand Junction, Colorado. And again, it was a low-scoring game, if I remember correctly, at CU. Now they're in the league. We don't face them this year. We'll see them, you know, next year as well. But you know, where did that start and that win fall in your pecking order?
Well, that was an exciting time, especially for a young quarterback like I was at the time, being a freshman. But fortunately, we had a terrific defense that led the way. Terrific O-line, a lot like we have here at Cal. Our O-line is real strong, a lot of leadership there, upperclassmen experience. So that's the engine to the car. When you have a great O-line, your car can do great things, or your vehicle, and we've got a super engine there in those guys.
Well, it'll be fun in spring practice watching you guys lay the foundation and the terminology for what happens in the fall. Good to see you again, and we wish you nothing but the best this spring, and we're really excited about what we're going to see on the football field next fall.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. We're excited, too. We can hardly wait to get started. Thanks.
All right, Bill Musgrave, offensive coordinator for the Bears. Spring game, April 11th. Come on out. And it will, we understand, be a game because there's more people on the roster this year than we've had in years past. So it should be a great experience. We'd like to see everybody out there on April the 11th. All right, that wraps it up for this week. A reminder, we'll have basketball. We got the Pac-12 tournament coming up, and a lot of good things have happened this year in that, and we appreciate Mark Fox spending some time with us today. So this is the penultimate podcast for the year. We got one more to come next week, so we hope you join us for that. Until then, I'm Todd McKim. Thank you very much for listening, and as always, go Bears!
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.